From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of May, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. And take up WOTUS again. That's the Waters of the U.S. ruling made by U.S. EPA yesterday. Not well received by the Republicans in Congress and many in the farm community. And if that's the case, it'll be exciting to see just how U.S. EPA releases the RFS due out on Monday, the Renewable Fuel Standard. We'll take a look at what would happen if U.S. EPA simply said, fine, we'll use Congress's numbers as written into law. And that all comes up during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago. On this Thursday afternoon, futures from the CME Group in the corn pit were up 4 cents, and the nearby July at 353.5, September 359.5, up 3.75, and December 370, up 3.25. March corn 380.5, up 3 cents, and next year's July at 393.5, up 2.5 cents. July soybeans were down a penny, 926 as they closed out the day. September at 903.25, down 4.5, and November beans down 4.5 at 902 for the day. January of next year at 909, 4.75 lower. Bean meal down 330 at 304.80, and bean oil 33 cents higher at 3206. Chicago soft red winter wheat for the day, 488.75. That's up a penny in the July contract, and the Kansas City at 510.25, down 1.75 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby June at 153.60, up $1.12.5. The feeder cattle in the nearby contract at 225.50, up $4.07.5. And lean hogs for the day, 82.5 higher at 84.60. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online anytime you'd like. Listen on demand on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio station, and Commodity Week before it airs on any radio station. We'll record that this afternoon and have it up by about 6 o'clock this evening.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check the outside markets at this hour. July crude oil at $57.82 a barrel. That's currently up 31 cents. Heating oil for the day at $1.87 is a penny and 4 cents higher. Diesel fuel as heating oil. Gasoline in the RBOB wholesale price at $1.98.5. That's up 4 cents for the day. And the natural gas at $2.71.7, down 13 cents. Ethanol futures on their last trade at $1.54.5 finished the June contract a penny and 4 tenths of a cent higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average about 28 points lower at 18,113, and the New York Gold at $1,189 is up $2.75. The dollar index at 97.05 is down 0.424 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly clear. That's actually for tonight, and we'll have a low of 58 degrees tomorrow night. We'll have a partly cloudy sky and a low of 65 under rainy skies. 70% rainfall tomorrow evening, 50% during the day tomorrow, with a high tomorrow of about 85 degrees. And as we move into Saturday, we'll see showers and thunderstorms continue from that overnight from Friday at a 70% level with a high of just 73 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy and a low of 49. And Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 67 degrees. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 51. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 28th day of May. It's a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is on the phone line from CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, but he is in Waco, Texas today. Thanks, Dan, for joining us. How's the weather there in Texas?
It's finally stopped raining, and the sun is out. So things are at least calmed down for a few days anyway, the forecast. A lot of rain has come out of it, but we still have pretty good chances going into the weekend. But things are at least drying out today, which is a big relief, actually, in the whole state of Texas.
Can you tell me about the corn market for the day, technically, where it now stands? We're down on the lows for both the lead option July and December contracts.
Well, a couple things. I mean, we're down in this 350 benchmark area for spot corn, and then on the December corn we fell back to almost the 62% retracement level of the fall advance when you look at the December continuous chart. These were places for the market to kind of make a stand at least for a few days here, and I see today we did do that. We got help from a pretty good ethanol, weekly ethanol production number. That's back on the upswing. That gave us some underlying fundamental support. And then the dollar did decide to break 40 points or so here today. And I think that's been the real driving force of the market. Earlier in the week when the dollar made those surges, we made Surge Friday to the upside, and that downward pressure on commodities, and then we had another one here after the three-day week, you know, on Tuesday. So the dollar has retraced about 62% of the advance off of the April high. We did penetrate it a little bit, but we were never able to close above that 62% retracement. So that's a spot here for the dollar to kind of have a correctional setback. We'll decide whether or not this rally was just a rally in a bear market, or if the market is resuming the uptrend after that big decline that we had through the spring months. So the dollar is going to be the key here, I think, at least in the short term. I know crop prospects are favorable, but the dollar has been really killing us in the export market. And if we get the dollar to go back on the defensive again and give back some of the advances it's had over the last couple, 3 weeks, I think you'd be surprised how the markets could respond to that. And I think that's part of the reason why the whole commodity complex had a firm undertone today with that dollar down about 40 points or so.
You mentioned 62% as a retracement in both the corn market to the downside and to the upside for the dollar. Yeah. These are Fibonacci numbers. Fibonacci, of course, a mathematician. Why are they important, and how does the marketplace use them?
Well, they're basically the natural numbers, what a lot of people feel is your Fibonacci sequence. You also have the Lucas number sequence, but the trade has used them for years, and they've been kind of key support points and resistance points, whether you're going up or down. And it might be more self-fulfilling than anything, but the trade does watch these retracement levels very carefully. Now, like I said, if this 62% retracement on the upside on the dollar does not hold, well, then you'll take a run. Then that would kind of open up the door then for the market to take a run toward the high that we had this year, which is above the 100 mark. Same way on the December corn futures, if you can hold this 62% retracement, well, then you've got a reasonable chance that this market can still have a decent recovery rally. What stirs it up over the next month or two could be a weather scare. It could be further weakness in the dollar. Maybe the trade's starting to think ahead that we may not have quite all of the corn acres planted, and we may have lost a million or two. And then it's going to be about yield. Now, if we have yields like we did last year, well, that million or two less corn acres is not going to make any difference. But if we would get ourselves into a dry spell during July, that would pull the yield down to 162, 163. Well, then the balance sheet on corn changes a lot. Beans is going to be, I mean, I've probably never seen any more bearish fundamentals, at least when you project out on beans. If we go ahead and plant the bean acres that USDA has indicated, and then if we're losing some corn acres and we're probably gaining bean acres, and, you know, the Informa Economics Group out of Memphis said that USDA is still a couple million too shy on acres on beans. So the bean thing really looks terrible if we go ahead and plant the number that everybody's trading and have a good yield, because we'll be looking at a 400 or 500 to 600 million bushel carryout, which would be terribly bearish unless we find a way to maybe use all those soybeans and biodiesel fuels. That could maybe change the balance sheet a little bit in the market. Then we would crush the beans for oil. Then we'd have probably a burdensome supply of soybean meal around. So I don't know which is worse, but at least we would create new demand anyway for soybean oil.
Well, on that note, I will let you go. Thank you so much, Dan. We'll hear more about that biodiesel and the potential, because the RFS, of course, is due to be released by US EPA on Monday. I will rerun something that I produced with Scott Irwin a bit earlier in the year. You'll hear it in just about 4 or 5 minutes. First, some information on WOTUS. We'll focus on just one agricultural news story for the day. Again, we'll look at the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers' release of the final Clean Water Rule on the Waters of the United States, or WOTUS Act. Senate Ag Committee Chair Pat Roberts says witnesses during the committee's hearing on the waters of the U.S. pointed out the real difficulties with a federal takeover of water. And Roberts says farmers and ranchers need flexibility in the rule and state authority to do the right thing.
I don't know if I'm more upset with the rule or the way they handled their commentary period. Many farm groups, many commodity groups really tried hard to point out the disadvantages of that 88 pages full of regulations, only to find out the EPA presses an app button and we get thousands of comments, and the administrator, Gina McCarthy, has the temerity to say 90% of the people who commented are for clean water. Well, no kidding. Everybody's for clean water. I don't know any farmer and ranchers not for clean water. I thought it was a very deliberate, amateurish attempt to stack the deck with regards to the commentary period that's essential on any regulation.
Roberts says he and his staff and his colleagues will be reviewing the rule. He says this falls under the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee's jurisdiction. Committee Chair Jim Inhofe, Roberts, and other senators will try to figure out the best approach.
The House has already spoken. They say this is an overreach, and it was. And so I don't know if the House bill is what Jim has in mind, but we'll be working with him.
Roberts says farmers have told him they feel ruled, not governed, as it relates to WOTUS. He believes EPA is close to being a rogue agency and out of control. For her part, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy says the final Clean Water Rule preserves current exemptions for agriculture and does not cover things like tile drainage systems, regular farm activities, or moving livestock.
And we're doing that without creating any new permitting requirements and maintaining all previous exemptions and exclusions. This rule is about clarification, and in fact, we're adding exclusions for features like artificial lakes and ponds, water-filled depressions from construction, and grass swales. This rule will make it easier to identify protected waters and will make those protections consistent with the law as well as the latest peer-reviewed science. This rule is based on science.
McCarthy says the rule does not add any new requirements for agriculture.
It retains all the decades-long exemptions and exclusions for farming, ranching, and forestry. It does not interfere with private property rights or address land use. It does not regulate any ditches unless they function as tributaries. It does not apply to groundwater or shallow subsurface water, cover tile drains, or change policy on irrigation or water transfers. These are all important points that we have made crystal clear in this final rule. The rule will not get in the way of agriculture. In fact, it specifically recognizes the crucial role farmers play.
And McCarthy says the new rule would expand the reach of the Clean Water Act by about 3%. Joellen Darcy, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, says the new Clean Water Rule clarifies which waters are covered and which ones are not.
Traditional navigable waters like rivers and lakes, interstate waters, and territorial seas are covered, as they always have been. No change. Tributaries, which science defines by the physical signs of flowing water, are included because they carry pollution downstream. Features that don't meet the scientific and legal definition of a tributary, including erosional features like gullies and rills and ephemeral features like ephemeral streams, are not covered. The rule maintains the current practice on ditches. Only ditches that look, act, and function like a tributary are covered because they carry pollution downstream.
Darcy says the rule sets physical measurable limits on covering nearby waters, including prairie potholes.
For example, an adjacent water is protected if it's within the 100-year floodplain, but not beyond 1,500 feet from a covered waterway.
Given all of this, Pat Roberts' colleague from South Dakota in the Senate, John Thune, says the rule is sweeping regulation and another power grab by the Obama administration.
I'm co-sponsoring a bill that would block this EPA power grab. I'm going to do everything I can working with my colleagues to try and stop this. We'll exercise all the tools that we have at our disposal, anything that we can do to try and put the brakes on this and see how that ends up.
Thune says now that EPA has decided to go final with the rule, it will have a profound negative impact on the way people do things across the country. If you'd like to learn more about the waters of the U.S. online, look for WOTUS on the EPA website. That's WOTUS. It should be on the front page. Unless, of course, it's next week when the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standards, might be on the front page of the U.S. EPA website. The agency, of course, does handle the mandates for biofuels in the U.S. It's supposed to release an updated set each November. It did not do that in 2014 or 15 or for those 2 years. The 2016 numbers are due out in November of this year. Next week, on Monday, probably, U.S. EPA will put forth its numbers for the 3-year period. In the meantime, I thought it might be important to consider just how using the default numbers, those that were developed by Congress when they wrote the law, would play out for the production of ethanol and biodiesel. If U.S. EPA said, fine, we'll use what Congress wrote into the law. The United States Congress set renewable fuels mandates a few years ago. It also gave U.S. EPA the power to adjust those mandates. EPA has not done so for the 2014 calendar year or for 2015. We'll dispose of the political baggage and simply focus on the results of using the default statutes written into the law. It says the nation must use 14.4 billion gallons of ethanol in 2014, but at the rate of no more than 10% of the gasoline consumed. This 10%, however, is actually 1.1 billion gallons less than the 14.4 billion gallon mandate. This is what University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin calls the renewable gap, and the only way to fill it, really, is with biodiesel, usually processed from soybean oil.
That number gets much bigger in 2015 because the ethanol mandate jumps to 15 billion gallons. And so if you think the E10 blend well is still 13.5 billion gallons, then there's an additional 1.5 billion gallons in 2015 that has to be filled by something. And we argue that that something is most likely to be biodiesel.
Well, this sounds like biodiesel usage would need to top some 2.6 billion gallons in 2015, but that's not quite the case, says Irwin.
Well, the arithmetic is actually quite interesting because of the growth in an obscure component of the advanced RFS mandate called the undifferentiated advanced. That was 2 billion gallons, that component in the statute for 2014. And the arithmetic works this way. 1.28 billion gallons of biodiesel gets a multiplier effect into ethanol equivalent gallons of 1.5, which is almost exactly 2 billion gallons. So biodiesel met that undifferentiated number in 2014. But it's now, in the next 4 years, going to jump 500, that component in the statutes starts jumping 500 million gallons a year each of the next 4 years.
Topping out at 5 billion gallons in 2022.
The bottom line is it doesn't take us very long to get a scenario where through either domestic production or imports of biomass-based diesel in its various forms, where we need 2 to 2.5 billion gallons easily for 2015.
This is only if the statutes are ultimately fully enforced. Admittedly, this is a big wild card, but it is the law, and until U.S. EPA acts, it is the mandate, says the U of I ag economist.
If they're going that direction, we're going to have a big biodiesel boom.
Scott Irwin follows the renewable fuels standard at the University of Illinois. You may read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Just for reference, I did record that audio with Scott Irwin earlier, last year. I was early in the month of December. He said it was still good. I had an email conversation with him while we were on the air. A couple of other notes. Our coverage of VOTUS was helped out a lot by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting members, including Greg Akagi out of WIBW Radio and Kansas Ag Network out of Topeka, Kansas, and Jody Hemstra of the Red River Farm Network in Grand Forks, North Dakota. They were instrumental, of course, in getting access to Senator Thune and Senator Roberts. Now on the phone line with us is Matt Bennett. He's right here in Illinois to take up the cash grain market. Matt, thanks for being with us. I'm pretty short on time. Wondering what you think about these lows in the marketplace at the moment.
Well, it was sure nice to see the corn market be able to respond a little bit today. Obviously, beans went the other way a little bit, but I think with the Argentina strike situation getting a little bit better, that was to be expected. And then, you know, it was really nice to see the ethanol numbers come through today for corn. That's the largest we've seen since basically the first year. So, you know, it was above the pace needed to get the USDA goal, and that's the first time we could say that in a long time.
Hoping that we have a bottom here shortly, and then we move sideways maybe through the rest of the summer. I don't know whether that'll happen. You got 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope. Let's just hope.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Matt Bennett is with Channel Seeds.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Hamburger Day. The word hamburger comes from Hamburg steak, which originated in the German city of Hamburg. The recipe was brought to North America by German immigrants. By the way, the cheeseburger first appeared in 1924. Credit goes to grill chef Lionel Steinberg of the Right Spot in Pasadena, California. On this day in agricultural history in 1892, the Sierra Club was formed in San Francisco for nature conservation. In 1897, Jell-O was introduced. Pearl Waite, a carpenter and cloth medicine manufacturer, produced Jell-O varieties in strawberry, raspberry, orange, and lemon fruit flavors. By the way, the dessert was named by Waite's wife, May. White eventually sold the Jell-O business to a neighbor for $450, who, with the help of a national campaign in Ladies' Home Journal, pushed sales by 1902 to $250,000. And in 2003, the first cloned horse was born in a natural delivery. The foal was created in the lab by fusing an adult skin cell and an empty egg, then returning the resulting embryo to the female's womb after a few days. Although clones are currently banned from racing, tissue from many top animals have been stored for cloning. The birth was announced in Nature on August 7th of 2003. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. We're always joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He's here now to take up the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start in the Midwest, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, primary corn and soybean country. They'd like to finish up planting, in particular of soybeans, certainly of corn if they have acres left to put in the ground. What do you see for the forecast over the next 7 to 10 days?
Well, we're going to see a few showers and thunderstorms over the next 2 to 3 days. So even though right now it is a beautiful day with a lot of sunshine across the Corn Belt, things will change as we get into tonight and more so Friday and Saturday. A strong cool front moves on through the Midwest, and that is the reason that we'll see scattered thunderstorms throughout the region. We're looking for amounts of 3/4 of an inch to locally 1.5 inches across a pretty wide area. This isn't going to be a gigantic rain event by any means, but we would prefer to see 100% dry weather right now in order to finish up soybean planting and get all of the crops in the ground, like you mentioned.
Turn your attention then to the western U.S., where the rain does fall, apparently, mostly on the plain. They've been wet. Will they remain so?
They'll remain fairly wet through Friday night and into Saturday. After that, a pretty significant period of drying occurs for at least 5 or 6 days. The real question is, how much drying do we need? If you look at Oklahoma, they absolutely obliterated their rainfall record for the month of May. So far, they've had about 13.5 inches of rain at the state level in Oklahoma. The prior record was around 10.5 inches. So what that tells us is that it's the wettest period in May in Oklahoma in at least 121 years. These records go all the way back to 1895, and again, the prior record has slobbered. That also extends into adjacent areas of Texas and into small parts of Kansas and even into Colorado. So just a huge amount of rain out there. What this means in the big picture for their wheat crop is yet to be seen, but all we can say for sure is that they have smashed a record that's pretty unbelievable.
Any other places around the planet that you have been watching, for instance, the corn crop in China, wheat crop in Ukraine, a wheat crop also in parts of Western Europe, France in particular, are those places all doing okay at this time?
Well, there's no big issues in any of these areas at the moment. If you look at Ukraine, it had turned a little bit dry over the last few weeks, but they've seen some pretty good rain over the last day or two, and that continues into tomorrow. That rain also extends into western Russia, and Russia being a key wheat-growing region is always an area of concern at this time of the year, because if it ends up turning real dry and hot, that could reduce their yields. It's a little warm and a little dry in a few areas, but we would caution that it was wet from mid-December all the way up to a week or two ago, so it's real hard to get too concerned about any problems in Russia. If any problems in Russia are to occur, they would most likely be because of the extremely dry planting season they had. They were in a pretty significant drought from late July into December of last year. France, a little bit of dryness there, a little bit of dryness in Germany. But again, at the moment, just nothing sticks out that really sets off an alarm bell in our head.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mike Tenora, of course. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember, you can find him again anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.